Okay. Now, first question is, could you tell me, like, the general outlines of your life leading up to 1950, like where you were born, where you were raised, basic stuff like that?
Well, I was born in Ohio.
Oh, yeah?
Alliance, Ohio, in 1970. And I lived there until I came out here in 1938 when work was slow. I stayed for 9 months, and then I went back and finished my trade. And that was just shortly about the time that Pearl Harbor was bombed. I was deferred from the service prior to that because of the nature of my work. And then when Pearl Harbor was bombed, I had a number of friends that at the same time I came out here in 38, they joined the service. A number was on the boat. And so my buddy and I decided that it was time for us to go. So I went down to join the Navy because I knew they had machine jobs on the Navy, in the boats. Mm-hmm. And when I got down there and talked to the recruiting officer, he said, well, he said, we got this new outfit. He said, I think it should fit in really better than the boats. It was called the construction battalion. And the reason for the construction battalion was that there were civilian construction men working in the islands in the South Seas and up in Alaska. And when the Japanese moved in on them, they weren't able to fight because they had they weren't armed and they were civilian. So then they decided to create the CB, Construction Battalion, of people who were in the service. And we were part of the Navy, so I joined that. Went back to Virginia to take my naval boot camp. And when we were formed into a battalion, then we were sent as a battalion to the Marines. So then we took Marine jungle training and stuff like that. Then we went to Pearl Harbor. We rebuilt the sub base of the bomb. We built an IA hospital for the people coming out of the South Pacific who were wounded. And then we built Nimitz's headquarters. We were there 9 months, and then we were sent from there out to Island X. We didn't know where Island X was when we got on the boat. We stopped at Eniwetok, and our officers got out at Eniwetok, and then we formed a convoy, and we ended up on Iwo Jima. Well, when we got there, there was really nothing there. The place had been bombed for over a month, and then we were all suited up to go in, and when we found out that we were the second rampart, then the Japanese opened up fire. Eventually, there were 20,000 Japanese on the island, but you never seen them because they were all underground. And when Marines finally threw hand grenades and flamethrowers, the commander of the island, to the point where he was down to 300 men. And he sent them out on a bandai attack. Of course, they all got killed, but there were 6,000, we had 6,000 body bags of our own because of the, and we go with cemetery for the time being until. And then, of course, the bomb, we were scheduled to go into, the next step was to go to Japan, and then we dropped the bomb, and then
you came back from?
I came back.
Up to 50, and you want to know what happened up to 50.
Did you come back to?
Well, I came back and went to work in Portland. I got 4 days after I was here, I got a job setting up a tool and die shop for a company.
worked at Tech County?
Well, that was not then. No.
Afterward, you worked at Tech County?
Yeah, we worked at Tech County. Denise and I met. She went to Linfield, and then I went on a trip down to California to visit some of my friends and in the service. And I went to Westmont College to visit a cousin. The cousin got me set up in a room to stay with him and do classes with him. I had an extra bedroom infirmary, so I go in that. And they set me beside the president of the college for lunch one day, and he began to ask me questions where I'd been, what I was doing. He always came out of service. Where was that service? And I said, well, the next was Iwo Jima. He said, well, that's where I was. He had turned out with the chaplain of the 7th Air Force. Seventh Air Force, and my battalion was side by side in that last battle. So he lost 6 of his men, and he asked me, "You want to go back to school?" He got the GI Bill, and I had a high school 12 years, and all of a sudden, my trade. Well, he said, "I want you to take the entrance exam," which I did, and he said, "Well," he said, "you can come back and go to school." Well, and I went to lose, so I went to school. And Denise was going to Linfield, and she transferred down to Westmont. We went to school together there for another year, and we got married.
That was 1950.
1950, we got married.
Mm-hmm. I was born in Portland, mm-hmm. and lived out on the east side until I graduated from high school, went to Washington High School. And then I worked downtown for 3 years. That was during the war. I was in high school during the war. And then I went to Linfield College. And then I went to Westmont College, and we got married. Mm-hmm. So I was in Portland during the war. Mm-hmm. I had a brother that was in the service.
Mm-hmm.
But the war was sort of a far away event to me because I was still just in high school.
Did you like know much about it? Or?
It was interesting. All we had in those days was the radio and newspapers. Every day in the newspaper there would be maps of showing where the troops had advanced for that day. Mm-hmm. Or you could go to the movies and see newsreels. And that was the only way we got news of the war in those days. No television.
What were your general situation like from 1950 to 1953? I know you two were married, but
when we came back from college, we were broke,
mm-hmm.
and we had a child. The first year after we were married, and so we lived very simply for the first number of years. We lived in a little tiny rental that was so small that the living room, we had the playpen in the middle of the room, and you walked around sideways to get around it. That was our living room.
And was that in Portland?
That was in Portland. And then we built a little house on the east side. Bill worked at Tektronix, and then...
First at Leopold Steel.
Yeah, Leopold Steel. Then Tektronix, and then we moved out to the Cedar Hills area.
Now, these are just some general questions about Billville, Portland, something like that. In general, what was... like your community life, like Portland community, Louisville community, in the 1950s, like, was it small, stuff like that?
Well, one of the interesting things about 1950, I don't think we had any supermarkets in those days. Everybody went to Portland, the city of Portland, to shop. after we moved out, say, 53, when we moved out to Beaverton, like, there was a shopping center that had a grocery store, and it had a five and dime type store. I think that was probably the beginning of the shopping center. Very simple shopping center type situation. We remember Beaverton. We used to come up over the hill from Portland and then come down into the Washington, the valley, and there would be a few lights off in the distance. Most of it was farm. It's very different today, right?
Yeah, we even today when we take a ride going to where I lived when I first came out here, Kaiser Road, Bethany area, all grown up.
What was like a significant major event like in the 1950s or 1950s that you remember like really well?
Well,
newsworthy?
Right at 50, I can't remember. St. Helens, of course, I was going through that. But that was funny everywhere.
Yeah. No, the Vancouver flood was in 48. I suppose it was a Korean War.
I don't remember dates, but I was opposed to the Korean War.
There's one thing that happened in, say, in 52, 53, along there, was when Khrushchev came over to the United States to visit. That was a very traumatic event in the United States, we thought, at the time.
How did you guys feel about that?
Very much against it.
Yeah.
He got his picture in the paper, newspaper. Because he wore a black armband to work at Tektronix.
I hired a young fellow from Hungary. I worked at Tektronix as a plastic tool and dye shop. And when he came to, I was told to interview him, he couldn't speak English. We could have an interpreter in a few words. But as I took him to the shop, I could tell that he understood the shop, that he knew something about hiring him. And he very rapidly learned how to speak. Those guys, I don't know how they did it, but they just picked up the language real fast. And we became very good friends. In the evening, he'd come over and have lunch with us before he went to his
English classes.
Yeah, he went to English classes.
But that was another thing that happened. That was when Russia moved into Hungary. Russia had moved into Hungary earlier, and he was just a teenager. And he was involved in... Yeah, but what had he done? He had done something against the Russian government, and because he was under 18, they couldn't execute him, so he was in prison. And when there was a revolt in Hungary, short revolt, and the prisoners got out, and he went over the border, got out of Hungary, and when he got out of Hungary, across the border, then he was brought to the United States. That was what the situation was.
So he and I, we spent a lot of time talking, and then when the president invited Khrushchev to come over here, then I don't understand why. That Joe and I had talked about how what he had gone through under the communists.
And so he didn't like communism. He didn't like communism.
No.
So he was going to wear an armband, black armband, so I wore one too. And we lived right across the street, across the highway from Tektronix. And I flew a flag at half mast.
And it was visible from Sunset Highway.
So it wasn't very long ago. Photographers out there wanted to know what was going on.
A reporter came, knocked on my door, and it scared me to death. And so I called him, and he came home from work, and they took a picture of him standing under his flag pole.
Of course, there were my peers, other managers that figured I should have got fired. And they took it to Howard Baldwin. He comes and says, "You got a lot of good friends around here." I said, "What do you mean? Whether or not they want me to fire you." But he did. But I was very much against communists at that time. You know, I've seen what the Nazis had done in the war situation.
What was your general attitude towards our government? Like, how did you feel about it?
Well, that's the beginning of my feelings on some of the things that we've done in the communists and like that. When the war broke out in Pearl Harbor, I thought I should go and join, and I did. And I was against Vietnam. I didn't feel that we should win in Vietnam. Very much against that. And the Korean War, I could do that. And in regard to Vietnam, if we were to go into war, I thought we should go in and win, rather than just going and taking a hill and backing out and then taking a hill over and over again, and our people were getting killed. I just couldn't see what that was.
Of course, that was after the 50s. In the 50s, we did win, in a sense, in Korea, so that there was not as much of a negative attitude toward the Korean War as it was later. But we were beginning to see something happening in the government that we weren't real pleased with in the 50s, especially there. Being friendly with the Russians.
Do you think it was important for the U.S. to stop the spread of communism? Do you feel that was important back then?
Yes, we just saw on a television last night what Reagan did in relationship to the Russians and how he got them, how he was so vocal against what they were doing, and also got them to tear down the Berlin Wall, and Poland was freed and all that. So we feel that was important, and it wasn't done until actually done. It didn't actually happen until Reagan's
time. Do you recall any patriotic observances, like Fourth of July, anything like that? Anything
that was always a big deal. My hometown was very patriotic. We had the statues of the doughboys in the First World War, and a cannon on the town square. On one street, I lived in a cross street. It was called Liberty Street, and another one was called Freedom. It was a very patriotic town.
That was
early. That made up in my...
Yeah. I think after the war, there was still that euphoria in the fact that we won the Second World War, so there was a lot of patriotism. It began to erode with time, and I don't know exactly when it began. But in the 50s, it was patriotism was pretty important, pretty high. I think the kids still did the salute of the flag and all that in school still.
All right, these next set of questions, they're Cold War questions. How did you guys feel about communism? I know you didn't like
it. Really sick.
But any other feelings towards it? Like, what were you, like, afraid of? Were you afraid of anything at all? Or just, what did you not like about it?
Well, we could see what was coming. The lack of freedom, oppression upon the people, and we could see it was continuing. And the further it went, the further out it was. Yeah.
Do you basically have the same feelings? Were you fearful of communism at that time? Were you afraid it was going
to... I wasn't fearful. No, I was never fearful of anything. But when I went to the service, I wasn't fearful of what I did.
I think we would say we were wary of it and felt that if it wasn't stopped, that there could be problems with it. I know Larry was talking about that as a teenager. He was telling Jonathan the other day that there was a real concern about that they might bomb us. And of course, now he was younger, and see, we were already adults. Probably saw it from a different perspective. But you know, they had drills in schools and in the grade schools and high schools. Bomb drills, that they were, like fire drills, you know, taught them that they get under the desks and stuff. So I think that it was, there was fear that there was a possibility of that they might do something. But at that time, I don't think we were as afraid. Juana, was the bombs, were they able to fly at that time? Could they have flown?
Well, they were gradually getting armament and the potential of being able to.
Yeah, to fly, actually fly into the United States with bombs. I don't remember that.
Do you guys recall any sort of night watch, watching for planes or anything?
I never got involved in anything like that.
Do you remember?
I don't remember whether they did or not. Did they?
Yeah. People like that, right?
As I say, I wasn't as much aware of that, but when I heard Larry talking to Jonathan about it the other day, I realized that there was more fear and more concern about that than I realized.
Did you guys share the view, like, do you think known communists should be arrested or deported or anything like that?
Well, I think that we've been too lax on recently, this is not the 50s, recently, really. We know what China, what their actions are on their own people, and I think we've given away secrets that we should never have given away, but that's not in the 50s.
Was it in the 50s when they had like McCarthy and the problems in Hollywood with the, have you read enough about this to know what
it was? It was either the 20s or the 50s. Right? The Red Scare was in the...
That was earlier.
Yeah,
that was earlier.
McCarthy, yeah, I think McCarthy was in the 50s.
Okay, he was in the 50s. Yeah.
Because I had a stroke here about 6 years ago, and I've got some blank
spots. Got some black spots. as far as McCarthyism, from what I remember, I think there were excesses done at that time, as far as the fear of communism in the United States, but I think it needed to be dealt with, and I did. But I'm not sure exactly whether what they did was excessive.
So you do feel it was okay to arrest or deport non-communists?
If they were definitely Russian spies and that type of thing, you bet.
Mm-hmm. But what if your next door neighbor was he liked communism, let's say, but he wasn't involved in any kind of Russian
because there's a certain amount of freedom as far as thought, and if it wasn't subversive or an actual threat to the security of the country, then I wouldn't say anything. I can't see why you would want to do that. You might have some lively debates. And I guess that went on pretty, especially in the colleges. There was a lot of good debate going on in the colleges. But I think that there were probably some subversive things going on that the government needed to take care of.
I had a lot of association with people who came from those countries. But I worked with a lot of people who were coming from communist areas and things like that. So I have a feeling, pretty close feeling, what the place over there. So I think that has an effect on my thinking.
Because we could see we understood the mentality, like say for instance of this fellow that came from Hungary, the two boys that came from Hungary. The way they felt about it was they were concerned because they saw what happened in their country.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of anyone being asked to take loyalty oaths or anything like that?
I never would. Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to do that at Tectonics.
So nobody had to do it at Tectonics?
Oh, no, at Tectonics it was nothing like that. Yeah.
And we didn't know anybody that was in a...
Well, there were security jobs.
Right, but we didn't know anybody personally.
Anybody that was in it.
Did you, either of you think like a war was going to happen between us and Russians, like nuclear attack, anything like that?
There was a potential.
I think that's probably it. We were just aware of the potential.
Aware of the fact that it could happen.
So you weren't really scared or nervous about it?
All I could see was down the road, if we continue to go the route we're going, we're going to have a problem. And it's the same way today. If we continue giving secrets away to
were you aware of the effects of like radiation if like a nuclear attack did happen?
Well, it wasn't we were aware of it by the newspaper and things like that. As far as anybody close enough to be concerned for themselves.
How did you feel about that, like, knowing what it could do or something like that? Even if you didn't get hit by the wall, you could still get out.
I think
that was all part of the
awareness.
Concern, possibility of what could happen, sure.
Of course, in a war situation, the amount of killings and bodies and stuff, we were sprayed with DDT every day. Planes would fly over and spray us. DDT because of the flies and all that stuff. We really didn't know about what that was.
Did you feel Portland was like a strategic target and anything like that? And Portland was significant for them? And,
I considered that as being a possibility because we were Seattle and
Seaport.
Portland and we were close to the coast and from ships out of the ocean, you know. In fact, during the war, we were blackout in Portland. That was during 45, the Portland was blacked out. So we were aware of that. Of course, then we moved out here in safety of Washington County.
Were you aware of it, like civil defense efforts, stuff like that? Like I said before, like the watchtowers.
No, I never had
evacuation routes and things like that. Didn't really concern you anymore.
Yeah, there was of course that could have been during the war too. We had blocked civil defense. Whether that
there's a picture of the plane flying over and spraying us.
You had no idea.
I've got pictures throughout this book that relate to something that I experienced in the service.
This is the 50s, honey, after the war.
Yeah, this is that.
Did you ever know anybody that had any bomb shelters or anything like that?
I'd say right now, we talk about in Oklahoma and those places where they had disasters, you know, they used to have shelters they could do it.
Yeah, that's the storm shelter.
That's nothing to do with it.
No, but there were people who did, but we didn't know anybody who did, but we knew that from the news that there were people who did, and there were people who moved out of the city, you know, they moved out into the boonies to get away from possible problems. But,
We moved to have animals. Horses and donkeys and goats for the kids.
Now, those are the end of the Cold War questions. I'm going to start asking three more questions. Not too many ones. Not as many as the Cold War. To what extent were you aware of what was happening with the Korean War? Did you?
What we saw on the news.
Yeah.
Were you into the war? Like, did you feel like you had to be involved?
I had no relatives, nobody that I knew.
We didn't know anybody that was in it, but we were certainly concerned for the Koreans. And then we, right after the war, we had a Korean orphan that we supported. So we knew what was going on. After the war, there were lots and lots of little orphans, and there were organizations that put them in homes, and then people over here paid $15 a month or whatever to support the child in the orphanage, and we did that. So I think our concern was for the people of Korea, and I don't think. Now that we see pictures on TV about what some of those soldiers went through in Korea, and talking to the guys that go to that, you know, the chosen few.
We go to the Milwaukee High School once a year. We have a day for veterans to come, where the veterans can go to the classes with the students.
We met a number of fellows that were in had gone through an unusually bad situation in Korea. But I don't think that the magnitude of the fighting was as vivid to me at the time as it is now.
In your opinion, why were we fighting in Korea? Why do you think we were fighting in Korea?
I can't say.
To keep the communists from taking over the whole country. Our attitude was against the spread of communism, and if communism spread from Russia and engulfed the whole Asian front, that was the next step to the United States. And I think that's why why the government felt we had to fight that, because the next step from Korea would have been Japan. And if we didn't do anything to stop communism, they could have taken the whole western side of Asia.
How'd you feel about that spread of communism throughout Asia?
That was fearful.
Were you afraid it was going to hit the United States?
Yeah, I think that was the fear. That was the concern, that if Russia took over the whole, because they did, as they did, they moved into China, they moved into Vietnam, and so yeah, that was a real concern to stop them from coming west.
Mm-hmm.
East.
Like,
that was east. I don't know now.
I was against Kosovo. We have no part on there. We haven't been there. So. I'm not against going to war when they're attacked and you got something like that. So, I don't feel anything. What have we gained? We haven't gained anything. They're right back where they are. As far as I'm concerned, we will get a prestige thing to Clinton. He should be in prison for a long time.
You're on tape,
Daddy. Did you see any local impact of the Korean War, like blood drives, drafts, anything like that?
I really don't recall.
Our kids were babies, and we were just struggling to make ends meet, and I think that if we had had nephews and nieces or whatever that were close to the age of to be in the service, we might have been more aware of that. But I'm sure it was going on, but I don't think we know.
How would you compare the home front in World War II to the home front in the Korean War?
Well, I can answer that. Entirely different. The home front during World War II was just, everything was rationed. There were no young men on the streets. Only, as a teenager in high school, the only young men we saw were the ones who were visibly ill, were unable to fight. No cars. They stopped making cars, so there was no new cars. We did everything to save, everything we could. It was entirely different. As far as the Korean War, it really didn't have any impact on the economy or the culture or anything. But the Second World War, you can't imagine what it was like. everything was, everybody was involved in some way with the war. I mean, there was the shipyards and, as I say, very few young men around. It's just very different.
So, during the Korean War, the home front, were there more men around? Were there more young men?
Oh yeah, I don't think that there was as few.
I wasn't personally affected with the Korean War, other than the fact that I was a kid.
I don't think that
the Vietnam War was more.
I mean, did it seem like we were at war at all, by the way?
Yeah, it kind of when I came home, I went right to work. I had no problem financially as far as, I mean, I've never been without a job.
See, I think in the Korean War, they only took the unmarried young man. I think definitely at that time, where in during the Second World War, that didn't matter. So there was a...
I mean, the 50s seemed to be a blank to me.
Yeah.
And I lost some of that.
Yeah, you're...
My wife will do something if you say, well, how come it is you can't remember the things we remember that we should remember together? But it's just gone. You can't help it.
Of course, now Billy was a young man during the Korean War, during the Vietnam War. So the Korean War, we had no ties with any young men at that time, so I'm not as aware of what the draft situation was like, whether everybody had to go or not.
So, was he deferred?
Billy? Our Billy? Because he's going to Bible school. No. He was deferred, but his number didn't come up anyway. I mean, because they did take him, even though they were, because of John. He was a Bible student. But I think that during the Korean War, you were deferred if there was if you were married or had children or you know, in the Second World War, it didn't matter.
Do you recall MacArthur being fired?
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
I was against that. I was for MacArthur.
So you didn't believe Truman should have done that?
No.
Do you remember anything of that sort?
I do.
Do you recall how veterans were treated as they returned home in the Korean War?
They weren't treated good. Badly at all. I think the Korean, not like they did in the Vietnam War.
That disturbed me very, very. Yeah. No, they were accepted back into society. Okay. That's the end of the Korean War questions. Now I'm just going to answer some miscellaneous questions about that. In what way did the polio epidemic affect this area? Did you know anybody? Polio, did it affect
yes.
your family?
Yes, we went and stood in line at high schools and got our little sugar cubes. We had big lines where you went to get your
vaccine.
Yeah, and we knew people that had got polio, and there was concern about swimming and different things. Staying away from situations in the summertime where you might get it. Yeah. And there was that big push to get the vaccine.
So were you pretty scared about it? Did you have like a fear of getting it?
I think everybody did.
Concern. I wouldn't say fear.
Well, it was concern, yeah.
Concern.
Yeah.
What were your like, feelings when the vaccine came out.
Oh, we thought that was great. Although one of the ladies that got, that we know of, got polio from the vaccine, remember?
Oh, no, I don't remember.
Pat Palau's mother.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
We know a lady that's still living, that's was paralyzed from the vaccine.
What did people do for entertainment, like in the 1950s, when they had radio and stuff like that? What else could you do?
50s. Shows, movies.
Drive-in theaters.
Yeah. Drive-in theaters, the young people, drive-in restaurants were big. One of the things that people used to do in the 50s in Portland on Saturday night was drive through Broadway down in Portland.
Did you have to go into Portland to do a lot of stuff?
Yeah. Well, yes, because all the movies were downtown in Portland.
There weren't any theaters like in downtown Hillsborough or anything like that?
Well, that, yes, of course. Yeah, but we didn't live here.
Oh.
We didn't live in Hillsborough. We lived in Beaverton.
Oh, that's right.
And I think there was a movie house in Beaverton. In fact, it's where the Beaverton Bakery. And there was one in Aloha. When did the drive-in movies kind of fit? We had drive-in.
They had them when I was in high.
Yeah, yeah. Few
of them. Of course,
yeah. Another thing that was big at that time was Jansen Beach. Jansen?
From our standpoint of entertainment, our entertainment was basically around the church. Because we didn't. He always had parties and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Right, he was wondering about as far as what was available.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is like the most significant difference in the 1950s and now? Like, it's kind of a broad question, but.
Prices.
Mm-hmm.
5 cent cup of coffee.
Are a lot of people more open? Is advertising a lot different? Sexuality has changed a lot.
Oh yeah. Because in the 1950 area was when that Gone with the Wind statement.
You wanted what the noise out there?
That's a cat. That's out there, right? You didn't on television. You never heard anything. On television, if you saw a bedroom scene, it was twin beds. And the movies, that Gone with the Wind statement was really talked about.
Mm.
So that was good.
So did, like in advertising, so I was looking through the old Argus and stuff like that. A lot of advertisements, they didn't show like as much skin as they do now.
And one of the funny things about advertising on television, when they showed a woman working in her kitchen, she would have high heels on. She was dressed up working in her kitchen. She might have an apron on over her pretty dress, but she was dressed up. I don't know how they figured that women would kind of mop the floor with high heels, but
was a lot of the stuff that they showed on advertisements like the high heels or the twin beds, is that true for like the home, the real home?
No. No.
Did it ever show women like working outside the house, anything like that? Or were they always inside being a housewife?
Well, of course, here in the Portland area, they had the shipyard with women.
That was during the war, That
has grown.
But as far as most women in those days were home, I think one thing as far as home, marriage, that people lived within their means, and women who worked were mainly women who had to, either because they were single mothers or so I don't think there was as much of that today, where two people have to work because they developed a level of
standard of living.
They put their standard of living to a certain level, and then if they both have to work to gain that level, then they both work. But when we were first married in the 1950s, your standard of living was geared by how much you made. And there was very, very little credit card living. I mean, you lived more within what you got, and didn't use credit cards. That was rather new. In fact, we knew that you needed to have a credit reference, and so we took out a credit card with Sears, so we could get a credit reference. And we bought our washer and dryer or our refrigerator on credit. But then we paid it before we had to pay any interest. So there was the standard of living was more even with what you made. Settled with that. I think that was more universally followed in those days than it is now.
What form of media did you rely on the most?
In the 50s?
Yeah.
The radio.
Radio?
Yeah. We didn't get a television. We did personally didn't get a television until probably the latter 50s.
Did you read the newspaper though?
Oh yeah.
Did
we take a newspaper?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we had a newspaper.
The radio was a primary source.
Right, yes.
Was there a time like when the family would get together and listen to the radio? Or?
Oh yes.
Well, they had programs.
Yeah.
Do you remember like? Nowadays, like the news on usually like in the early morning, like 6 o'clock at night. Was it like that back then? Do you recall?
I think so. Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
Well, that's basically the end of all of my questions. If there's anything else you'd like to say, anything like that, something you can know.
I think a lot of us have been blank. I go out in the shop now, and I've got machinery out there I've run for all my life, and I have to think my way big. Instead of just reaching over and doing it, I have to just step up.
I can remember one thing. When we bought our house in Cedar Gail's, what was it, $6,000 we paid for the house?
I don't know, but it wasn't very much.
It was under $10,000 that we bought a house. And, life was really different.
You talk about people getting married now, about houses, $100,000, $200,000, that's a drop in the bucket for them, you know.
All right.